Before we get started, I want to give a shout out to another podcast in the mobility space that I think you'll enjoy, the Rideshare Guy podcast by Harry Campbell. Harry has become a trusted expert on all things rideshare, and he may be the only person ever to have driven for Uber and also interviewed Uber's CEO on a podcast. On the Rideshare Guy podcast, Harry interviews a wide range of industry and thought leaders in the rideshare and mobility space. You can find and subscribe to the Rideshare Guy podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. This is Smarter Cars, a podcast about autonomous vehicles and the future of transportation. Welcome to Season 4. This is your host, Michelle Kairouz. In this episode, we're talking with Jake Cione, the Chief Operating Officer of Transit. Transit is an app that provides real-time transportation information, planning, and payment across multiple modes to help you plan and get around cities. Jake, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Michelle.
Great. Can you start by telling us what Transit app is and where you guys are operating?
Sure. So at Transit, we build an app that integrates all the ways to get around your city without your own car. So from public transit at the core, but also includes bike share and all the other new modes of mobility that are operating out there. We're in about 200 cities today, mostly in North America. In the US and Canada, we cover virtually every single mid to large city, but we're also in France and other places in Europe. And covering almost every major city in Australia and New Zealand.
That's a lot of cities.
Yes.
So Transit app started way back in 2012. How has your service evolved since then? What has that process been like?
Sure, and I can tell a little bit of the origin story of the company. I think those are always fun ones to understand how the company has evolved. So the original story was the company was founded by Sam Vermette, who was an industrial designer and a self-taught programmer, and Guillaume Campagna, more from a computer science background, in Montreal, Canada. And their experience was that Guillaume had been building transit apps for over a decade, even before most cities had GTFS, which is the standard transit data format. And so he was doing this by, scraping data from government websites in order to build apps for public transit. And Sam, had been building freelance apps on his own with a variety of clients. And so they met, actually, which is a fun story. They met because Guillaume was looking to publish an app in the App Store for the first time, and he was not yet 18. Exactly. And so Sam had, a bit of a reputation as an iOS developer leader here in Montreal. And so Guillaume had reached out to Sam for some advice and information about, publishing apps in the App Store. And that was how they had first met. But mostly they built the app originally to scratch their own itch. So at the time, most public transit apps were very local. They were built for one city. And so they both had sort of independently come up with two ideas that today seem pretty obvious, but at the time when they started working on the app in 2011, were not necessarily universally thought about. The first was that as GTFS started to emerge in more and more places, they wanted to just build one app that worked everywhere. Instead of having one app for transportation in New York, one in Boston, one in Montreal, and so forth, they wanted the app to work no matter where you went. The second thing was that they wanted to leverage geolocation on the phone. And the reason for that was at the time you had sort of two types of apps for public transit. One app was about like Google Maps, there's how do I get from A to B, right? And the other app was I'm going to browse essentially a database of all of the. What they realized is that for the daily commuter, which makes up the majority of transit trips in many cities, for the daily commuter, what they care most about is when does my bus get here and not how do I get there. So the original design was simply about give users the fastest way as possible using their location to see when the next bus or train would arrive. And so that was sort of a core part of the original vision and the original version of the app. So the app first launched in 2012. I hope that that background story gives some good context on how we got to where we were.
Yeah, Yeah,
go ahead.
And it kind of leads into what I was wondering, which is, what is the most important use case as the app has developed? Is it trying to tell you the fastest way to get from A to B if you're an existing commuter and you already know the route? Is it real-time information, or is it comparative? You know, should I take the ferry or should I take BART?
Sure.
Or is it for when you visit another city and you have no idea what the transit system is or how to navigate it?
All the above. I would say that, you know, getting back to sort of the core, what we started out was really about giving people, you know, easy access to real time information. But then, of course, you know, there are situations where, you know, you're going to work, you know, you're taking the 55 bus and all you care about is when that bus shows up. But, you know, we don't always go to habitual places. And so building in, you know, capable and reliable transit routing was a huge part of that as well. And same thing, one thing that was really nice about supporting all these markets is, you know, when you go to a new city, you don't often know your way around there, and it can be confusing. But having an app that looks familiar, that you understand how to navigate, makes it easier to navigate the real world as well. But you know, getting back to the beginning, you know, when we had started, we were simply focusing on information. So really, you know, how do I get there? Where is my bus? And first, just on transit information. But from there, as mobility started to shift, you know, as Uber and Lyft emerged, as bike sharing became more popular, we began realizing that it was not just about getting you around by public transit, but really getting you around by any mode that wasn't your own car. And so in 2014, we first added Uber to the app, as well as bike sharing, just, again, information about these services, and then moved on to adding car share with both Car2Go and some local partners, so that we can really give you all that information for all of these different services in one place.
So bringing it forward to today, we've also seen the introduction of things like dockless bikes and scooters. Does Transit App try to incorporate things like that, or is it limited to things that have a fixed point of origin for transit?
No, we also do support dockless bikes and scooters in the app. You can see their location. You can see information about them where we have it, such as battery level and what the cost of that bike or scooter would be. And that actually comes in handy in a lot of places because, you know, for example, in DC, I think they have 10 different operators. And so often what you care most about is not, you know, whether that scooter is blue or purple, but more about, you know, which one's closest to you. So that's been sort of a key thing that we've been doing, is continuing to add these new services that emerge in cities. You know, who knows what's going to come next, but we're making sure to continue to support them on the information side. Alongside that, though, we are also starting to layer on payments for more and more services. You know, ultimately, information is hugely important, but giving the people the ability to easily act upon that information is crucial, too. So, you know, we started on the payment side actually way back in 2015, where we launched our first payment integration for bike share in Aspen, Colorado, where you could actually buy a bike share pass through the app and unlock a bike. And we scaled that out to about a dozen cities now, including most of the largest cities in North America, including Toronto and Chicago and Montreal, where you can, you know, actually go ahead and buy a pass to unlock a bike. Obviously, from bike share is not the only thing that you need to act upon. So from there, we actually added in booking capabilities for ride hailing, where you can now book Uber and Lyft trips directly in the app. You can also book car sharing trips directly in the app and unlock vehicles in certain cases. And of course, the most important part, as of last spring, you can now buy public transit passes directly in the app, which is now, in that time, we've scaled that to about a dozen cities, including Denver and Cincinnati and Santa Monica. One thing that's particularly interesting in all of these cases is that, you know, we're integrating multiple partners. So, you know, not one company handles payments for all transit agencies, not one bike share supplier handles payments for all bike share companies. So we've been integrating with different partners. So it really can be as close to universal as possible.
So
You also launched something called Transit Accounts. Is that sort of the place where all of these payment options sit in the app?
Yeah, so we launched this in September. And so, you know, as we've talked about in this conversation, there are more and more services to get around your city, and not just, you know, different types, but within each category, there can be several operating in a city. And then, you know, you might go to a few miles away into another city, and then, well, there's a whole other set of options. So what we built with Transit Accounts was a way to universally hold information about customers so that they can access mobility, whether that's payment information, you know, personal information like an email address. But importantly, what we've done is when you're trying to go from using one service to another, we get the user's permission to transfer that information to another service provider. What that allows is the customer does not need to go through an entire flow of re-entering all of their information to access that service. So it's sort of a central place, a central account to access all of these mobility services. There are two pretty interesting things about it. The first is, you know, what's often talked about in mobility as a service is this question of, you know, who owns the customer, right? So am I taking the payment? Am I holding the customer details? And so you're disintermediated from your customer or vice versa. And so what we've done is we've actually just shared that information. So the customer has everything in our app so that they can access things easily, move all of this complication to the background where they don't see it, but also ensure that the partner has access to all of these details as well so that they can continue running their service. So that was one of the key things. It was, you know, quite a big engineering lift that we're quite proud to have built. And you know, the goal is to add more and more folks into those accounts and make it easier to access these new services.
So when I create a transit account and I provide login for my Uber account that I already had and my Lyft account that I already had and maybe some scooter accounts that I had, then Transit app has access to all of my historical rides and customer information the same way that Uber and Lyft and the scooter companies do?
No, we wouldn't get any of your historical information of trips you booked. What it would be is you've gotten into the app. Let's say you are in Denver. You want to buy a transit ticket. You enter your information, your email address, your payment information. We securely hold all of those details and you can buy a ticket. Let's say tomorrow you're flying from Denver to LA, you want to ride Big Blue Bus in Santa Monica, which is the local bus agency, and you want to buy a ticket. So because we have that information, buying a ticket is seamless. You can just go ahead and do it, even though the payment provider in Santa Monica is different than the one in Denver. In Santa Monica, we work with a company called Token Transit. In Denver, we work with a company called Misabi. And so, you know, this is not interesting to the end customer, but what is interesting is they don't have to go through another sign up form. They don't need to download a new app in order to access the services that they want to.
And that's because you have my credit card information or other payment and contact information in your app, and you're sharing that with Big Blue Bus so that they can then charge me for that ticket without me having to have a separate account through them.
Exactly. And the important part for the transit agencies and, you know, as well as the mobility operators is if tomorrow Big Blue Bus decides they don't like me anymore, they don't lose access to all of that information about their customers, right? They still have those accounts. They still have that information on their side. So that's been a key thing for us and for our partners.
Right. And so when it comes to transit, let's say I fly into a city and I want to take the subway in that city. If I am logging on and buying my ticket through the transit app, can I also tag on or otherwise access the system itself directly using the transit app? Or how does that work? How do you integrate kind of the access or the ticketing once payment is handled?
Yeah, so it really depends on what a system uses for validation, let's say. So, a system can use something like a MetroCard in New York. In other cities, they will have flash passes where you actually show a visual pass on your phone to the driver. In other places, there could be barcodes that you scan. So that really depends on how the city is validating. Right now, we have two types of integration, which would either be barcodes, where you get on the bus and you scan your ticket, or a visual, where there's sort of a visual ticket that you have on your phone that you display to the driver. So, you know, we're pretty agnostic for the types of validation schemes we can support, but those are the first two cases of what we've implemented.
And so, in all of the instances where I'm paying through the transit app will also, in some way or form, serve as my ticket to get me into the service. Okay, great. And going back to kind of the route planning and the idea of real-time information, you mentioned the GTFS data format. How are you, is that the primary way that you're getting information about public transit services in each city? And how does it work with real-time information? I know that probably varies widely by city and by service, but what are some of the challenges there, and how does the GTFS data work, and then also real-time, and how do you pull that together?
Sure. Yeah. So I can talk a little bit about, you know, the data access first. So, you know, today we take it a bit as a given that there's universal access to GTFS data in North America, where, you know, basically every single transit agency is publishing that data openly for anybody to use. This is more and more the case in other places as well, but not always quite as advanced as in the US and Canada.
And why don't you explain what GTFS actually provides you with?
Sure. Yeah, so there are sort of two distinctions. One is static information. So these are things that don't change that frequently. Things like where is the bus stop? What is the schedule? You know, what is the color of this line? So information that, you know, some agencies might issue small corrections quite often, but generally does not need to be updated in real time. So that's the static information. The other information is the real time information, and that will contain information such as the position of vehicles, the predictions of when a bus or train will arrive at a given stop, but also service disruption information. So if there's, you know, a sick passenger at a stop, for example, and trains are going to be delayed. So that's what's in the real-time standard.
And for the public transit agencies that you gather data from, How many of them also have this real-time aspect of to the data? In other words, is it universal that everyone is able to tell you where the buses are and when they're going to arrive, or is that only in certain areas?
It's certainly not universal, but it's becoming more and more common where, you know, at this point, I think the majority of large cities in the US and Canada have this data. And more of them have it in this standardized format called GTFS real-time. That is not quite as universally adopted today as the static information, but more and more agencies are putting it out in that format, which just makes it a lot easier to access for all kinds of different use cases.
And do you have other ways, such as crowdsourcing or other means to give your customers real-time information if the city is not able to provide it?
Yeah, I mean, so we do a lot on that side, but you know, generally speaking, it's in addition to the information we get from the transit agency, not a replacement of the transit agency information. And so, you know, to talk a little bit about that, one thing we found, and you know, it's not often brought up when there are mobility as a service conversations, but really the most important thing for users is accurate information of when their bus or train is going to arrive. That's the thing that we see time and time again, you know, as the core thing that our users care about. And so we've done a lot to make sure that we have that information. So from building automated tools to notify agencies when their data feeds aren't working, to building tools to track the accuracy of real time in a variety of cities, to see how good that quality is, you know. But obviously, the question, as you asked, is, well, what if the real time is not, you know, great? So there's sort of two key things we do. The first is that we have a feature in the app called Go. What Go does is it holds your hand throughout your journey. It tells you when to leave home to catch your bus. It tells you to hurry up if, you know, the bus is going to get there earlier than it originally thought. when you're on the bus, if you want to fall asleep, we will alert you a couple of stops before your destination to tell you, hey, you know, you're about to arrive, you know, get off the bus here. So it really, you know, is a full sort of companion for your journey. But one part of that feature is that while you're using it, you know, with the user's permission, we are also tracking the location of the vehicle. And so what that does is that it allows us to improve the quality of the vehicle locations that we receive from transit agencies. In certain cases, especially for transit agencies that have older equipment, real-time updates can be only every few minutes. And so, you know, imagine seeing a bus at one stop and then 3 minutes later seeing it four stops down, you know, down the line. That's not, you know, as useful as it could be to customers. And so we use that Go data to supplement the information we get from transit agencies. And now in some of our on some of our busy routes, we can have over a third of trips, you know, being crowdsourced and augmenting the transit agency data that we get. The second thing that we do in addition to the Go crowdsourcing is we've now built our own machine learning prediction engine. And so what that does is it looks at, you know, historical data and other a variety of factors such as, you know, traffic and other things that can be impacting, you know, real-time arrivals to overlay on top of the predictions we receive from transit authorities. And so we first rolled this out in Montreal and we cut real-time inaccuracies by about half in the city. And we're working to roll this out to more cities and continue training that model as well. And there's one last thing I can mention, you know, for the folks who do care a lot about real-time transit information, is that, you know, one of the things we also look to do is ensure that the transit agencies are, you know, working with, you know, great real-time information providers. And so what we found, generally speaking, is that our partner Swiftly, which is a company who provides, you know, a variety of data services to transit agencies, generally has the most accurate information. So even just pointing transit agencies to those that we know really specialize in providing accurate real-time information and accurate predictions.
You've talked about the information that you're getting from these public transit agencies. Can you talk a little bit about what the partnerships are like as you go into different cities and work with different cities? I know in some cities you're sort of endorsed by public transit agencies. And I know you've also done some other innovative things, like in Pittsburgh. Maybe you could talk about the Pittsburgh Micromobility Collective and what that might look like.
Sure, yeah. So with open data, the beauty of that is that, you know, anyone can do anything with it, essentially. So I can turn on, I can go to a city and offer the app, you know, just as is. But obviously, in order to have the best experience, you need to be working with the transit authorities, with the cities. And so, you know, in order to deliver that the best experience, we need to be partners. One thing that transit agencies have been doing historically is, you know, they would open their data and that was it. And so you would, you know, go to a transit agency website, let's say the MBTA in Boston, and you'd see a website page that had 50 different apps that were built on top of the data. You know, that's fantastic to see that kind of innovation built on the data that they opened. But the problem was that for riders, they didn't know what to use, what was great, you know, what was the best place to get the information they were looking for that offered a great experience. And so, you know, what our partnerships looked like was that transit agencies really wanted to be directing customers to an app that they could trust, that they can work with. And we obviously wanted the support and the endorsement of that transit agency. And so what these partnerships would look like would be, you know, transit agencies would go out and recommend us to their riders. Riders would know where to get great information and go for a good experience. But we would work very, very closely with the transit agencies as well. So, for example, we'd give them back data on how people were getting around their city. We would give them access to a dashboard so they could see how their riders were using the app. And send alerts if they didn't have an existing, you know, service alerts feed. And we'd work on building features that were important to them. One of the things we've been working with a few agencies on is putting extra focus on accessibility features in the app. So things that help, for example, people in wheelchairs or using strollers. We now have about 1% of all of our users have turned on functionality to help them see what parts of the system are accessible and help them route around it. And we have about 0.5% of all of our users who've turned on voiceover, which is particularly helpful if you're, you know, if you're blind or vision impaired. So it's this close collaboration with transit agencies that really ensure that the experience is as good as it can be.
And tell us about Pittsburgh and some of the other things you might be thinking about in terms of ways to work with cities and think about things like mobility hubs or other ways to promote multimodal transportation?
Sure. Yeah, so, you know, Pittsburgh put out an RFP. They were looking to see, you know, a great example of a public private partnership where you could bring together, you know, best in class providers in a variety of areas, whether it was micromobility, you know, car sharing, carpooling, information, and pull together a team that would work with the city on their goals, whether that's, you know, reducing single occupancy vehicle usage, or improving access to public transit stops and so forth. And so one of the very interesting requirements of that RFP was that they required a multi-party team. They didn't want just, you know, one company to be, you know, providing mobility in a city, which, you know, is quite interesting. You know, the realization that, you know, it's really going to take everyone to combat car ownership and car usage. And so they structured the RFP to look for, you know, teams that could collaborate together. And so we responded with a team that was led by Spin, but also included Zipcar and Waze Carpool and Swift Mile, which makes docking stations and others, to, you know, provide a full suite of mobility services to the city. And so what that's looking like is, you know, our role in there is to integrate all these different providers into one experience where they can access and pay for bike share, they can pay for public transit, they can pay and access scooters, all inside of a single place. And so, you know, work is underway, but we're really quite excited to bring this to Pittsburgh. It so happens that Pittsburgh was a city that, for many reasons, had strongly adopted the app. So today in the city, about 1 in 3 people who get on a bus or a train in the city today are going to already open up the app. So it's a great opportunity to grow off of that strong existing foundation.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, cities are, I think, really looking for ways to promote multimodal transportation. And I think realizing that just telling people, well, everybody should ride the bus, is not really a message that has gotten very far. And that with the proliferation of these new technologies like micromobility, and rideshare and car share and these other options, that it might be easier to get people out of their privately owned vehicles if you combine multi-modes together in planning your trips. What do you think, you know, based on the data and experience that you've had, what do you think is the biggest barrier to getting people to adopt multimodal transportation?
Sure. I think it starts with even just awareness. You know, we're all mobility nerds, and we know that we can take, you know, an Uber to the train station and hop off and then take a bike share, you know, that last mile. But it's not something that necessarily is apparent to average folks. And so one thing that we have done on our side to make that much more accessible is building in routing that makes it easier for you to combine those modes. So in our app, you'll see when you plan a trip, you'll see public transit options, but then you'll also see trips that might tell you, you know, take the scooter to that train station. And actually, look, it's going to be a lot faster than if you took an Uber even, or if you took public transit on its own. So I think it starts with even building up awareness. But the second piece of that comes back to a lot of the data questions we were already talking about earlier on the call, which is, this is only possible. It's only possible to educate people and show people their options and make it easier for people to access them if that information is universally accessible, right? If your best trip involves taking a scooter from one company, a train from a different, and a ride hail from a third, this doesn't do the consumer much good if these are all in 3 different apps, 3 different payment schemes. And so the foundation of building this into a way that's actually usable for people is continuing to build off of the work around transit data standards with data standards for micromobility, for ride hailing, for other services. What's great is that there's already been a lot of progress there. So among bike sharing systems, there's a standard modeled off of GTFS called GBFS that has been adopted almost universally by all dock bike sharing systems. and more micromobility services as well. And you also see cities requiring that from their operators. So whether in Washington, D.C., or in Portland, or in Chicago, or in Baltimore, all of these cities have said, if you want to operate in our city, you know, we require that this data be made open and available. And, you know, it doesn't stop just at information. I think information is the first piece, but ultimately, like I said, in order for this really to have an impact, it needs to also be about payments. So you have cities who are similarly following up on their work around making information universally accessible by making payments accessible as well. So you have a city like Dayton, Ohio, that's requiring of any scooter operator wanting to come into the city to make booking APIs available. You have Chicago requiring that Divvy, the bike sharing service there, enable integration into third-party apps as well. And then you obviously have, you know, even countries doing this where, you know, Finland has led the way in requiring booking and payment standards. So, you know, I think there are a lot of different ways that we're going to tackle the issues of people driving, to get around everywhere. But one of the core ways that we can address this, and really that is not that's really not necessarily challenging for cities in a lot of ways, is to make this data available and open for that innovation to build off of those standards, just like it built off of public transit information.
And do you feel like the act of having to pay, that the act of payment is a significant barrier for people using public transit? I know there's some debate, and I think it was Kansas City or some other folks who have come out and said, you know what, we're just going to make the public transit portion of the trip free to eliminate that barrier, whether it's affordability or just the act of needing to have a pass or buy a ticket. Do you feel like the act of payment is a barrier to ridership, or how should cities think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's sort of two separate issues. I think the first one are there equity questions about, you know, fair, you know, making sure that fares are fair. And so that can, whether that's exploring free fares or exploring reduced price transit fares for certain populations, I think, you know, that's important, and there's, you know, great work being done there. I think the second part of payments is making this, making payment a lot easier. And if you are required in every city you go to figure out, you know, some new kiosk and figure out the machine and figure out, oh, well, it does not take credit cards, it only takes cash, I think it serves as a huge barrier to public transit. If you need to have cash on you, it serves as a barrier to riding public transit. And so the more you can make this open, the more you can let more companies and, try to build off of the foundation that the transit agency puts in place, you know, I think the easier it becomes to ride public transit. You want payments to not be something that is a concern or a reason for you not to get on the bus.
And what about smartphones? I know Apple Pay in some cities is facilitating transit payment. Is that a competitor to what you're doing, or would you integrate with some of those types of services?
Yeah, not at all. I think our goal is to make it easy to access regardless of what the validation scheme is, whether it's through contactless bank cards or Apple Pay or validating through barcodes. The hope is that it's not really about the technology; it's more about making this as universally accessible as possible. So we're adopting the technology as it comes. Some cities are using flash passes, others are using barcodes, others are using other technology, but we're really flexible to work with whatever follows.
And some people may have heard about some new providers doing a mobility as a service offering. We're seeing this more in Europe, but also in the US, with the idea that not only would you be able to buy an individual trip using an app, but that there might be a subscription service. So you might pay one monthly fee to have access to unlimited public transit, plus a certain number of Uber or Lyft rides, plus a certain number of minutes of bike share or scooter share. What do you think about mobility as a service, as a product? Is it something that you guys would think about? And how do you see that fitting into the transportation landscape?
Yeah, and we can start with mobility as a service, which is it's what the industry is calling, but you know this is what we've been doing every single day, even if our users don't think of it that way. They think of it just as convenience. So there's sort of the user perspective and the industry perspective, which is always important to keep in mind. But diving into sort of that specific concept within Mass of subscriptions, you know, I think you can look at it from two perspectives. You know, I think, you know, one way to look at it is from a transit agency's perspective, which is obviously something that's very often on our mind. And if you're a transit agency, you're seeing a variety of trends. You're seeing, you know, ride hail, being competitive in some cases for people who would have taken a transit trip. I think there was some survey in Boston which said that 42% of people who had taken ride hail, if ride hail was not available, would have, you know, chosen to take public transit. You have micromobility, which is serving trip distances that can be similar to the bus, for example. I think numbers we've seen are around, you know, 1.5, 2 miles for an average scooter trip, and you know, an average bus trip can be around, you know, 3 or 4 miles. And then you have, you know, things like open payments that are allowing you to easily pay for single trips, you know, with bank cards in several markets. And so one of the impacts of all of these different things on the transit agency side can mean that, you know, an end customer decides not to buy a monthly pass. They're choosing a trip on an individual basis. And so if you are a transit agency and your end riders are deciding, you know, that between a bus trip that might cost a few dollars and a scooter trip that might be pretty similarly priced, you know, you might be more likely to take that scooter now that you don't have that sunk cost of that monthly pass. And so what that can mean for a transit agency is, you know, fewer people buying monthly passes and leading to less revenue, which leads to less service and creating a bit of a negative spiral for that agency. And so one of the things that I think is interesting on the bundling side and subscription side is actually the transit agency trying to find ways to bundle new mobility into the passes that they're offering customers. Because, you know, transit is still the foundation of mobility in a city. People are still going to use transit to get around more than these other modes. But, you know, why not bring them into the fold? And so I think there's a transit agency angle. On our side, you know, I think my answer actually ties back into what we talked about before around, you know, the access to APIs and open standards, which is there's just not been enough experimentation yet. I don't think enough people know what users want. You know, is it what they want? They're not to think about it. They want the peace of mind and are, say, willing to pay a premium for that of just having a pass that works on everything. Is what they want, you know, a guarantee that they'll get somewhere by a certain time or, you know, access to a car. You know, I think we don't have the answers to that yet. And one of the ways that we and others companies in this space can start, you know, finding those answers is, you know, by removing these sort of custom bespoke integrations and these, you know, slow learning cycles. The more that, you know, payments are open in more places and to more people, the more that, you know, variety of companies can experiment and figure out what is it that users want. And so I think, you know, from our perspective, that's really, you know, the foundation. I think that there are a lot of things that can appeal to customers, but, you know, we don't have all of the answers yet. And you know, we're excited to start experimenting around that.
It seems like it's hard to know how you would price a service like that and know how many trips of each type would be appealing to the most number of people. So it seems like it's a problem that will take some amount of time to try to figure out.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, all of this experimentation I think will help folks solve. Again, builds off of the availability of APIs and payment standards. So it's not so it's open to more and open to more companies to you know find these answers.
So what do the next few years look like for transit? You raised some money last year. You've got some investors, I think, who are arms of auto manufacturers. What are you looking to do over the next few years?
Yeah, I think we're looking at it, you know, in a couple of ways. I think the first part is really continuing to invest in the core experience, whether that's routing, reliability, the quality of the data. These are things that matter to people every single day. And these things aren't binary. It's not that you have real-time information that it works. It's not that you have trip planning, that it's the best possible trip planning. And so, you know, continuing to invest in that core experience. But, you know, moving on from that, you know, we're also working to integrate more services into the app. You know, we've talked about our integration of scooters and dockless bikes, worked to integrate more cities. We launched our first South American city this summer in Buenos Aires. but also, as you've talked about again, deepening those integrations so that you can pay for and unlock and access these services in more and more places and more easily. Both, you know, individually, whether you're booking an individual scooter trip, but also multimodal trips. So making it easier to book these multimodal trips in one click, to access them, to unlock them. Those are all sort of core focuses of ours and what we're working on over the coming months.
Well, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. This was really interesting to hear how you're developing this app over time. Thanks again for coming on the show.
Thanks so much, Michelle. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Jake for joining us. If you're enjoying the podcast, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. For the show notes for this episode and all of our episodes, please check out our Medium publication called Smarter Cars. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.